I've done some reading in an area that I find interesting and a little controversial, which is fine. You may not agree with what I'm going to say, but this is regarding decision making and the will of God. So let's start in. Let's talk about wills of God, plural. What are different kinds of wills of God? Well, first, we know there's what's called the sovereign will of God. And what I'm going to be doing is giving you a lot of verses. And it's kind of overwhelming if you're just listening to this to hear all the verses. So why don't you email me? That's Gary@apologeticsforlife.org. Gary, G-A-R-Y, at apologeticsforlife, all one word, .org. And I'll be glad to send you notes on this. And you can look up the verses yourself. And there are plenty more verses. I'm just going to tell you that. I'm going to give you the streamlined version today, but there are more verses than what I'm giving you. So let's start with what's called the sovereign will of God. I'm going to take you first to Daniel 4, verse 35. This is what Daniel says. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" So God has the sovereign ability to control things. We see that also in Proverbs 21. Let me find it here. Proverbs 21, first verse. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a watercourse wherever he pleases. So can you hear things like those verses talking about God's sovereign will? It will get done. Nothing will stop that. But we also know that God has what's called a moral will as well. So let me turn to the New Testament. Let's do some New Testament verses on this. Let's go to Romans. Now, you know what? Let's go to Thessalonians. This is 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 18. It says, I'm going to actually back it up, verse 16. So this is 1 Thessalonians 5, 16. Be joyful always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Now, do you see a difference between that will and the sovereign will? The sovereign will is going to happen no matter what. Nothing is going to prevent God from carrying out his sovereign will. So things, of course, like the life of Jesus, the death, the resurrection of Jesus, nothing Satan put in the way was going to cause that to get off track. But do you see in this situation, it says give thanks. This is God's will for you. Do we have to do that? Will we automatically do it because it's God's will? No, because this is God's moral will that we're unfortunately free to break. And we do, don't we? How about this? I'm still in 1 Thessalonians, if you go just next door to chapter 4, take a look at verse 3. It's God's will that you should be sanctified, that you should avoid sexual immorality, that each of you should learn to control his own body in a way that's holy and honorable. So look what it's saying there. It's God's will to be sexually pure. Now, do Christians fail in this area? Of course. And so this is not God's sovereign will. This is God's moral will, and we see that in a lot of places. But here comes, and everybody agrees with these two, so I don't think I'm going to hear any disagreements or any problems. Yes, God has a sovereign will that will get carried out no matter what. Yes, God has a moral will that we can, because of our own stubbornness and sin, we can thumb our nose at and break that will, break those commandments. Here's the third area, though. Is there an individual will for each one of us? And what do I mean by that? Well, the people who believe this say God has an individual blueprint for our lives. Everything from the kind of job we will hold, to the person we'll marry, to the town we'll live in, to the kinds of friends we'll have, that God has a blueprint, and we have to find out what his decisions are so that we'll know how to make our decisions. So we need to find that right person to marry. We need to find that right job. We need to find that right place to live that God has already established for it. So how do people talk, how do Christians talk who believe this? You'll hear things like, "I feel led," or "God is telling me." They may talk about fleeces. You know what they're doing there? They're taking you back to Gideon in the Old Testament. Gideon wasn't so sure that he was going to be able to fight the people that God had asked him to fight on behalf of the Israelites. So Gideon, being a little hesitant, put out a real fleece and said, "Okay, make the ground around it wet and keep the fleece dry. And next day, that was exactly what it was. So he knew that was God's will. Well, he actually made God do the opposite the next night because he's pretty hesitant. But they talk about putting a fleece out now to determine God's will, which means God, if the phone rings in the next 30 minutes and it's a job offer, that's the one I know I should take because you're responding. So those are called fleeces. Some people use what they call open and closed doors. They go to a, let's say, a business, do an interview, and the person says, I just don't think you're right for the company. So then the person walks out of there as a Christian and says, well, God closed that door, so he doesn't want me there. He'll find some other door open. Now, sometimes you hear people talk about the voice of God, or God spoke to me. These are pretty common. I mean, I've heard those kinds of statements in church several times. Well, here's where we're going to end up, maybe in an argument, and I hope not. I hope it's nothing that's going to escalate at all. But I don't think there is such a thing as God setting out an individual blueprint for our entire lives. So I'm going to be telling problems that I see with that. And of course, you're welcome to email me with a response of any kind that you have. So I've got 10 responses to this. So let's go through those and see what you think. One problem with this idea of an individual will for every one of our lives. If you move from the Old Testament to the New Testament, you can see God giving more and more freedom to people, kind of like a dad. When you were a little kid, you had less freedom. Dad was your mom was the one that set out a whole lot of limits. But as you got older, you gained more and more freedom. And we see that, and I'll show you some verses, but we see that as we move from the Old Testament to the New Testament, God seems to be letting loose a little bit, allowing people much more freedom. Let's talk about, so that's the first point. How about number two, Paul? Paul is the model Christian, isn't he? Sure. Paul had a lot of times where he ended up having to make his own decisions rather than praying and waiting for some kind of sign or a fleece or an open door. In Acts 15, let me give you an example there. So in Acts 15, give me a second. Okay, Acts 15, 36 to 40. Here's what happened. Sometime later, okay, one more time. I'm in Acts 15, starting verse 36. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, let us go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with him, but Paul did not think it wise to take him because he deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left. And so we get the story of a disagreement. We get a story of a change in the partners. And there's nothing there that says anything about the fleeces being put out or I feel led or anything like that. It just says Paul did not think it wise. He was using his own wisdom to choose who he wanted to take with him. Let's go to Acts 20. We're still in Acts. So this is Acts 20:16. Here we go. Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus to avoid spending time in the province of Asia, for he was in a hurry to reach Jerusalem, if possible, by the day of Pentecost. What does it say there? Paul decided. He did it on his own. He thought about it. He wanted to get to Jerusalem in a hurry. So he said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to skip past Ephesus. So that sounds like a decision-making opportunity for Paul, and he took it. We could do some others, maybe. Well, okay, let's try one more. 1 Corinthians 16. Okay, 1 Corinthians 16. Paul's decision-making going on here. 16 verses 4 to 9. He says, 1 Corinthians 16, let's start in 5. After I go through Macedonia, I'll come to you, for I'll be going through Macedonia. Perhaps I'll stay with you a while or even spend the winter so that you can help me on my journey wherever I go. I don't want to see you now and make only a passing visit. I hope to spend some time with you if the Lord permits. But I'll stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost because a great door is open for me and there are many who oppose me. So Paul sounds like he's saying, yeah, I'll take this on. I'll do this. How about 2 Corinthians 1:15? Let's see if I can find it here. Because I was confident of this, I planned to visit you first, so that you might benefit twice. I plan to visit you on my way to Macedonia and to come back to you from Macedonia, and then to have you send me on my way to Judea. When I planned to do this, did I do it lightly? And on and on. So he says, chapter 2, verse 1, I made up my mind. I made up my mind. Again, it sounds like he's doing this through wisdom. So Paul makes, and there are plenty more verses, but I'm just giving you a few. Paul makes his own decisions. So it seems like if this is the chief missionary of the church, and we're not hearing things about fleeces, then, and God is telling me, he sounds like he's making this up through his own wise choices. How about number 3? Problems with the view of the individual will. First of all, the Old Testament's a little different than the New Testament. Much more freedom in the New Testament. Secondly, Paul makes his own decisions. Number 3, those who received special instructions, in other words, if they got actual instructions, a blueprint, they occupied special places in God's program. They're often apostles or they're prophets in the Old Testament. It doesn't seem to be something that the average person ended up getting. Direct commands and direct blueprints from God. Number 4, when they did receive these kinds of insights, they were done mostly through supernatural revelations. So let me take you back to Acts one more time. Acts 9. So give me a second. Here we go. Acts 9, 10 through 16. In Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision. Ananias, yes, Lord, he answered. And God tells him to go and ask for this man named Saul. And, of course, Ananias is not real crazy about it. But he goes because he had a vision. Pretty powerful. One chapter earlier, in chapter 8 of Acts. Look at chapter 8, verse 26. Here's Philip. Now, what happens to Philip? An angel of the Lord said to Philip, go south on that road. So he started out. He met the Ethiopian eunuch. So he's gotten these messages. These people have gotten these messages. Let me give you one more place. How about Cornelius? The story of Cornelius in Acts 10. It says Peter is praying and he's hungry. And he has this vision in verse 11. He saw heaven opened. And then a voice calls him, get up, Peter. And so he ends up going to see Cornelius. So often you see these supernatural revelations that tell people specifically what to do. So there are some times where it looks like God is intervening, but it seems through some supernatural connection there. Here's another problem with this view of individual will, of God's will for your life. This will can't be done in all situations. Well, I guess it could, but it seems really, really silly. Let me give you an example. You get up in the morning. Do you pray about what socks to wear? Do you pray about what shirt to put on? Do you pray about what cereal to have? Do you pray about the exact minute to leave your house? Do you pray about chewing gum or not chewing gum? You see, that sounds really silly, I know. People say, well, when you marry, God has a will for that. And if you buy a house, God has a will for the house, individual will. Well, where does that individual will stop? In other words, what price limit? Do you think God has a will for your car, as far as what car you should buy? That's a little less money than a house, although, wow, prices of cars these days. Whew! I think back to my first car. I think it was $300. Okay, I know that. Yeah, that dates me. Well, anyway. So people say, well, maybe a car, certainly a house, and definitely a wife, and definitely your job. Okay, but is there a price limit? Is it anything over $10,000 God has a blueprint for, and under it he doesn't? That doesn't make any sense to me. You go out and you buy a hoe. Do you pray about that hoe and seek the one hoe that God has for you? Do you put out a fleece based on this? No, you go out to the store and you look at the whatever it's made of. If you want a fiberglass hoe, do you want one that's wood? What's the guarantee like? What's the price like? You do that on your own. Well, why don't you do, if you believe in this individual will, why don't you include the price of a hoe? Checking a book out of the library. the food you eat at a restaurant. Does God have an individual will for your dinner tomorrow night? And I don't mean to be acting silly or sarcastic, but you just don't make those kinds of decisions looking for God's will in every aspect of life. So where do you draw the line? It seems pretty arbitrary to me. All right, and here's another problem with individual will. Sometimes just there are simply equal options that may occur. There may be two really, really good jobs for you. There may be two homes that will serve your family very well. There may be two cars that are extremely useful for you, and it doesn't really matter which one you pick. That seems to go against the idea that there is this individual will for us. Here's another problem. If people come up to us and say, God told me such and such, well, do you see that shuts down any chance to discuss it? You can't argue with that kind of decision making. That ends it. Once you say, why in the world are you going to marry that woman? She is, I know her past, and it's not a great past. And the person says, well, God told me. Well, you're done. The conversation is over. You can't try to convince the person. So there's no way to effectively argue, and I don't mean argue in a negative way, but there's no way to reach a careful, critical decision at that point. Here's another problem with the individual will. It's just way too subjective. Sometimes there's something going on with you physically. You have a chemical imbalance. You may have a psychological need. Unfortunately, it may actually be demonic activity, but you're telling people you've reached this decision, but it's based on intangible qualities that could be influenced by all sorts of things in our lives rather than wisdom. One more problem. I'm on number 9 now if I've lost you here. Number 1, Old Testament going to New Testament, allowing more freedom. Number 2, Paul made plenty of decisions on his own. Number 3, the people who did get special instructions were often in special places in God's program, like apostles. Number 4, it's done mostly by supernatural revelation when there is some kind of influence from God about what to do. Number 5, it can't be done for ordinary decisions. There's got to be a line drawn somewhere. Number 6, you may end up with equal options or both perfectly good. Number 7, you can't argue with immature decisions. God told me. End of discussion. Number 8, it's often too subjective. Could be just something psychological, for example. So here's number 9. It creates a lot of confusion and frustration and anxiety because the weight is on you. The responsibility is yours. When you're dating somebody, you better find out if this is the single person for you. Now, let's think about that for just a minute. So you found this person and you like this individual a lot. You better be really, really careful. What if you make a poor decision, even though you've sought God's will, you marry the wrong one? Well, if there's this individual will for everybody's life, that person that you married was really supposed to belong to somebody else. So now you've messed up not only your life, you've messed up that other person's life. And then the person he or she was supposed to marry has to marry somebody else. You've set off a huge chain reaction, a worldwide chain reaction. Nice going. You've actually messed up the whole world. Now, again, sorry if it sounds sarcastic, but can you imagine the anxiety if you do the wrong thing? I can't imagine living like that. That makes me just nervous thinking about it. A lot of frustration. Where are those real clear indications? It's like God is playing a game with us. Oh, you're getting closer. Oh, now you're getting cold. Oh, now you're a little closer. There are all these hints. There are all these suggestions. There are all these obscure specifics that we better pay attention to so we can begin to figure out what God's will is for our lives. Because he's not going to write it up in the sky. We're going to have to use hints. We're going to have to use the voice of God. We're going to have to use fleeces, things like that. Number 10. To me, this is one of the real key things. The problem with that idea of an individual will, this business of open and closed doors. God closes doors, so we walk away from them. God opens doors, we're supposed to go through them. Well, let me give you some examples from Paul's life. He's so good to do these examples. It says, oh, this is the one that I read before. I think I read it out of order. I apologize. This is 1 Corinthians 16, and Paul is talking about a chance to go through an open door. So he says in verse 8, chapter 16, 1 Corinthians, I'll stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost because a great door for effective work has opened to me. So look what he says there. Hey, a door open. I can get something done for the kingdom of God, so I'm going to stay. All right, so now he's going through an open door. Well, if we just go next door to 2 Corinthians, I guess that was a pun, huh, going next door. 2 Corinthians 2:12. Here's what he says. Now, when I went to Troas to preach the gospel of Christ and found that the Lord had opened a door for me, I still had no peace of mind because I didn't find my brother Titus there. So I said goodbye to them and went on to Macedonia. Wow. So what happened there? The Lord had opened a door. Paul could be there. And if God had that will for him, that individual will, and opened the door, Paul should not have thought twice. He should not have second-guessed it. He should have stepped through that door. But he said, I didn't have any peace of mind because he didn't find Titus there. So he said goodbye. He ignored it. How about Acts 16? Here's one more spot I wanted you to see. Acts, give me a second here. Okay, so here's Acts 16:26. 16:26. Okay, it says, suddenly, boy, talk about an open door. Paul is in jail with Silas. And he's a prisoner. Suddenly there was such a violent earthquake that the foundations of the prison were shaken. At once, all the prison doors flew open and everybody's chains came loose. Well, at that point, I'll read the rest of it in just a second. Remember, this is chapter 16. That's an open door, literally. Paul's there with Silas. Boom! There's an earthquake. The prison doors fly open and the chains come off. Doesn't that sound like God is saying, go, go? And the jailer wakes up and he sees this open. He draws his sword out because his job was to keep those prisoners there. If they escape, it's his life. Paul shouts, don't harm yourself. We are all here. And he stays. He stayed there. He ignored that open door. So real quickly, the 10 points again. When we move from Old to New Testament, more freedom. Paul makes his own decisions. People who received these special instructions were often in a high place, like an apostle or a prophet. It was done, when it was done, God would give specific directions. It was done by revelation. There's no doubt about it. Nothing secret, nothing quiet, nothing kind of subtle. Number five, it can't be done in ordinary decisions. You have to draw the line someplace. You got to make your own decisions using wisdom. Equal options may occur. No way to argue with really poor decisions because people say, God told me. It's really subjective. It could be a psychological issue or a physical problem. Creates a lot of frustration and anxiety. And then number 10, the Bible doesn't teach that we get guidance from open or closed doors. So let's do this. Let's talk then, if that's a problem, how do we make decisions? Wisdom. That's the key, using wisdom. And what's wisdom? You just use knowledge the right way. Use knowledge correctly. There are no signs to read, no voice of God to hear when you make decisions. Now, obviously, you want to obey God's moral will. Absolutely. We're not talking about just running off and doing whatever you want. God's moral will has been laid out pretty clear to us in the New Testament. But if there is no command given, we have freedom. We have freedom. Let me give you an example. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 6. There are several of them, but 1 Corinthians 6. This is verse 12. What does Paul say? Everything is permissible for me, but not everything is beneficial. Wow, everything is permissible. It's okay if he eats one kind of food or the other kind of food. It's okay if he talks to one person, if he talks to another person. It's okay if he has one kind of job or another kind of job. Paul says that's perfectly all right. Right next door, 1 Corinthians 7, 39. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. Okay, so there's part of God's moral will that you are not unequally yoked, but she's free to marry anybody she wishes. This is coming directly from Paul. And again, there are plenty of verses in the New Testament that talk about the freedom that we have to make our own decisions. We want to use personal factors in our wisdom choices here. For example, 2 Corinthians 9. Oh, I'm in 1 Corinthians. Okay, give me a second. 2 Corinthians 9, 7 says this. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. It's our desire. That's what Paul says. Each man should give what he's decided in his heart to give. Do your own decision there. Look at Romans. Let's go back to Romans. Romans 14:5 says this. One man considers one day more sacred than another. Another man considers every day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. Sounds like freedom of choice there, doesn't it? Personal conscience. We should be using wisdom that comes from God. After all, in the book of James, I'm going to turn to that real fast. James 1:5, if any of you lacks wisdom, ask God, he says. It'll be given to him, but you have to really believe. So it says, use wisdom that comes from God. He will grant you the wisdom. Why would he grant you the wisdom and then tell you, don't use it? Try to find out what I have laid out for you. So where do we go for wisdom? Well, James says we go to God. Obviously, Bible, prayer, good counsel. I hope you have some people in your life that can provide good wisdom for you. Maybe it's older Christians. Maybe it's a pastor, a youth worker, somebody who you can go to and lay out some of the things you're deciding on and listen to some good counsel. Find some good instruction. Do some research. Use experiences of people. Sometimes our bad experiences are useful, aren't they? We learn what not to do. So we see that the wisdom approach is what the church used and what we should be using. Acts 15, there's that famous church council. You know that story, I think, here. But they're trying to decide, I'm going to go ahead and turn to that. They're trying to decide about the Council of Jerusalem, how Jewish do they have to be? And so it says, verse 6, chapter 15, verse 6 in Acts, the apostles and elders met to consider this question. After much discussion, Peter got up, talked to them, and they listened. And then Barnabas and Paul told them the things that were going on there. And then at the end, it is my judgment, somebody says. And then they all decided certain things. Now, it'd be a lot simpler, wouldn't it, if it said in Acts 15, verse 1, they got together and they sat there and prayed to get a voice from God. Or they sat there and prayed and found an open door. They put a fleece out. It doesn't say that. It says each person got to speak. It says they considered what they had to say. And they met to consider the question. So unless God gives you an unmistakable directive, just make wise choices. I tell you, wisdom is a rare thing these days, but it shouldn't be. There are a lot of sources that we can go to. So if you're interested in this topic, if you'd like to read more about it, feel free to contact me. But there are two good books. Well, actually, it's an online presentation by Greg Kokel called Decision Making. And it's powerful. I've read through it and listened to it more than once. And Gary Friesen, F-R-I-E-S-E-N, Friesen. Gary Friesen has a book, Decision Making and the Will of God. And he goes into much more detail, obviously, than I've been able to do just in these few minutes. But, you know, I grew up actually thinking that there was this individual will. And good thing that was in my earlier days, but and I certainly pray about decisions that I make. But the wisdom approach has been a real blessing in my life because I've avoided the kind of frustration and that confusion that I think comes when you feel like you're on the hook for that. You've got to figure that stuff out. You've got to find those subtle clues from God. Instead, we want to do God's moral will. And then, like a good father, God gives us choices. God gives us freedom. He's given us, we're actually created in the image of God. And I think one way we're in his image is the use of our mental faculties. And so thank you to God for giving us that kind of freedom.